listening to NASA Live from Astro G, hopping on our light cycles and going to town. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
Your buddy Mike the Ghoul here gonna bust out the graph paper and start drawing on the grid because we're talking some Tron Ares.
We about to get derezzed? Sequel,
yeah, the sequel that we wanted, but yet nobody asked for.
Maybe didn't even want at this point.
And before we get off and running, we would like to thank our sponsor this week, Spectre. Are you tired of the mundane and underpaying? Does the tedious oversight of moral governments feel like a leash on your true potential? Well then, welcome to Spectre. We aren't just an organization, we are the silent architects of the world's destiny. From the shadows of the highest summits to the depths of the deepest oceans, we operate where others fear to tread. We don't just follow the news, we create it. We are currently seeking dedicated, high-caliber individuals to join our global security and operations team. We aren't just looking for employees. We're looking for the invisible hands that shape the future. Spectre, join us today, and thank you for sponsoring us this week.
So we had two Tron movies that came out a while back. We had the 1982 Tron, which was fine. It was
for the time, it was fine.
Cutting edge artistically, really bland story. Then we had Tron Legacy, which at the time when I first saw it, when it came out, I thought it was kind of bland, but it's very, very pretty. And going back and watching again, I liked it a lot more than I did the first time.
Yep.
Watching Tron Ares, I don't feel like that's going to be the same thing.
I don't either. Well, let's get the good out of the way real quick. Visually, the movie again, very stunning. Yeah, they spared no expense at the right moments, at the right times, in certain aspects of the movie. The story... I mean, you know, they keep trying to make Jared Leto a thing, and when he's the best part of the movie, it's not the best thing in this, context for me. There was just a lot of forgettable people. There were people that I don't know what their point was. There's cameo for cameo's sake and nostalgia, whatever, but
it's
I did not like it.
So
yeah.
The plot of Tron Ares is all about permanence, which is something we've never had to think about before because the movies have never even bothered saying that it was a thing. Effectively, when things come from the grid, and in this case, for this movie, there's actually two grids, because there's the ENCOM grid that we barely see, and there's the Dillinger grid, which you have to think is stolen tech that they made that is their own grid. Whatever the case, if it comes out of the grid, whichever grid it is, it can last for 29 minutes in the real world before it crumbles away to dust and gets loaded back on the grid. Why? Who the fuck knows? It's just an arbitrary number they came up with. But there is supposedly permanence code that Kevin Flynn way back in the day came up with and decided never to share with anyone and didn't say anything about. And so we have two sides. We have the ENCOM chick, whose name I can't remember. The character's bland and boring. Who wants the permanence code for altruistic reasons so she can, like, make digital orange trees and import them into the real world, because that makes a whole hell of a lot of sense.
Yeah, and then, solving problems with it, trying to be good, you know, humanity side of it, I guess, right.
Sure. And then there's the Dillinger Services kind of thing that wants the permanence code so that they can make digital soldiers they can sell to the U.S. military and make them permanent, because clearly the best thing to do is make a permanent soldier that you have to worry about in case they get injured or die, when a 29-minute soldier that crumbles away leaving nothing but the fresh scent of pine is somehow worse?
I mean, get good at what you're doing and make your missions last less amount of time, or find out a way to stagger them. Like, it seems like it's better to have them disappear.
Yes, yes. You send them in, they infiltrate, they do their mission, they crumble to dust, everyone comes in afterwards like, where the hell are these guys at? And they're like, I don't know, no one's here now. Like, it's really fucking stupid.
Yeah, I think they had it right without the permanence code. Like, you got the perfect soldier right here. Like, no trace left. Like, what are you doing?
So since Grace Lee, her character, finds the permanence code in Kevin Flynn's old files just sitting on a floppy disk, she has it in her memory. And even though she destroys the permanence code before Dillinger's special service bot, Ares, could come and catch her, they still capture her, take her into the Dillinger grid, and are going to kill her at the orders of Mr. Grandson Dillinger, played by Evan Peters, who played the speedster in the X-Men movies. And he was so much better over there. I feel bad for him in this movie. Yeah. Oh, it's so bad. He was good as Quicksilver. He didn't deserve
He was. And as a villain, like, this movie had a real issue of identity, right?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't give a shit about the villain.
No.
The, you know, Greta Lee, like, to your point, like, she's supposed to be a main part of the story. She was forgettable. Yeah, like, I just, I don't know. Like, it was a fast watch. I mean, this could have, you know, got ahead of its skis and tried to be an hour, like 2 hours, 40 minutes, but it was a crisp 119.
Yeah. So, it all falls, like, it's really pathetic how it is. Oh, we need the permanence code. And then Greta Lee instantly finds it. Oh, Dillinger wants the permanence code. Instantly they kidnap her. Oh, she needs some help to escape. Ares instantly decides to turn and become a good guy for no reason whatsoever. At every step of the way, the most obvious turn of the plot is what we get. There's no twists. There's no actual things to keep you interested. No compelling plot moments. It's all the most expected bullshit throughout the movie. And to your point about how the at least they put their budget on the screen, I guess, sure, there's some very pretty moments. Unfortunately, all those moments show up in the trailer.
Yeah, again, another movie suffering from the giving too much out early kind of syndrome here. All the stunning visuals, they were given away. There was no surprises. You're gonna get what you get in Tron. You're gonna get the cool looking light cycles. You're gonna get the flying ships that just look like they would be really bad to fly, but whatever. It's a Tron thing. But I mean, back to the soldiers part, though. Everybody is always going to try to find that next big thing. They're going to want, like, how do you get a one-up on your enemy? You know, make it before they make it kind of thing. But I just don't understand the thought behind making it permanent. Like, that is what bugged me the entire time. I just kept thinking back to this. Like, you're leaving traces of what you're doing. Like, what is this? Like, you can make as many as you want. Time flows differently in the grid versus the real world anyway. Like, you can make an army in there in weeks in the real world. Like, I don't get it. It just didn't make sense to me.
No, the very start of the plot makes no sense. And then the movie can't commit to anything. It just rotely goes through the motions. And you can feel it straining. It really wants to be something different, something about permanence and digital creations coming over from the grid and how they can adapt into the real world and so forth. But all of that comes from Tron Legacy sequel, which got ditched, and where Ares was just a minor character in that, and suddenly he becomes the hero, and the whole movie has to rewrite itself quite poorly around him. And you're not wrong. The best part of it is Jared Leto, because there's just no one else that seems to give a shit in this film. And that's not their fault. That's the fault of the script and the production and everything else. It's a very pretty, very empty movie. The best thing you can say about it is that Nine Inch Nails' soundtrack is pretty fucking kick-ass.
Woo! I was going to touch on that, too. Like, you know, once we got through all the veggies here in this meal, let's get right to the dessert. Oh. Nine Inch Nails, they were...
Nailed
you know,
it.
For as awesome as Daft Punk's soundtrack was in Tron Legacy, like, it really felt like Nine Inch Nails was inspired by that tone and sound, and like it was Trent Reznor firing on all cylinders for the soundtrack here. He was incredible, you know, and you expect great things from Nine Inch Nails, and Trent Reznor's amazing, and you know, they certainly did not disappoint here. The music was fantastic.
Yeah, he and Atticus Ross have been working together for years and years now, like from back with the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and everything, and doing their soundtrack work that way. Mm-hmm. He said in an interview he felt very pressured because Disney didn't just hire them, but they specifically asked to use the Nine Inch Nails name on the soundtrack as opposed to just Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, which are, I mean, they're basically all of Nine Inch Nails at this point anyway. The two of them are the band, but because it has the legacy of Nine Inch Nails and the expectation of that name, Trent said that he felt so much more pressure to get this one right, and not just to make it a soundtrack, but to make it an album in its own right. So that's purposely why there's like four actual real tracks on there that are specifically singles, along with a bunch of instrumentals and so forth, because he wanted this to be a Nine Inch Nails album that you'd go back to and listen to afterwards. And I think, honestly, my bet is that he watched the movie and was sitting there going, oh my god, they're paying me for this. I need to make this good so that this actually lasts, because the movie won't.
Yeah, the music was, you know, phenomenal. Brilliantly done. Uh-huh. It was phenomenal. Every time, like, you know, it worked with the scenery that was going around, the tone that was set. Like, it was really well edited in that way. So that and the visuals, like, saved mm-hmm. the movie at points for me. For as lacking as the story was, I was still compelled by what I was seeing. I was still into it emotionally because music can touch you that way. But it just overall, as a story, you didn't go back to enough of what Legacy set up for this to like bring in all these new characters I didn't give a shit about, and it just wasn't for me in the end. Like, stunning visually at times, music was great, story was forgettable, and the best part about it overall was the mid-credits scene too, because again, they tick that nostalgia box a little bit.
Yeah,
but we'll see. Nobody asked for this one, even though some people wanted it, and we'll if they're going to keep printing money, I guess we'll see another one, but who knows?
No, this one didn't make enough. This one bombed at the box office. I think if we get another Tron, it'll be another 15 years, and everything that happens in Ares will be forgotten, and we'll get some new continuity, or just a complete reboot instead. Because the thing here is that it's very clearly trying to set up a trilogy. This is Disney's thing. And unfortunately, you need enough plot for three movies to set up a trilogy. We had enough plot here for like a 20-minute episode of Tron Uprising, that TV show that came before Legacy. Like, this can barely fit one of their episodes. Now, if you did the visual representation with the Nine Inch Nails soundtrack across 20 minutes of video from this movie, like get Topher Grace to edit something together, I'm sure that would absolutely kick ass. This would be mm-hmm. a great 20 minutes of movie. It's terrible mm-hmm. at over an hour and a half. Oh my god, and it's desperately trying to set up more, but there's not enough here because they're waiting to do all the good story somewhere else that we're never mm-hmm. gonna see.
Mm-hmm. They do too much of this nowadays where they're trying to set up the longevity factor without worrying about like what you have right in front of you.
Yeah.
You're thinking of your next movie and your franchise and your whatever kind of sales. You can't even get us attached to the people in this. Like, I don't give a shit about half these characters.
No.
And I still don't. Like,
I can't remember Dillinger's name, besides the fact that his last name is Dillinger, because that's been a villain through all movies. I can't remember Greta Lee's character. The only reason why I remember what Jared Leto's character's name is because it's in the fucking title.
Right?
So, like, if they named this Tron Insurrection or something, I'd be sitting there going, so Jared Leto's in this, and he's playing Jared Leto? Like, that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty much what it is. The movie's bad. The movie's just bad.
It's not good. Just failed across the board. Yep. And I mean, it feels sad to beat up a movie like this that holds so much nostalgia value as a franchise for some people. Nah. But I mean, like, it's just not a good movie at the end of the day. It just wasn't.
But Nine Inch Nails won an Emmy for it. So you know what? That's a win in my book.
Yeah, that's Trent Reznor doing Trent Reznor things, and I would expect nothing less from someone that always brings it.
As Alive As You Need Me to Be is such a great single. I mean, that sells the movie for... I wanted to see the movie because it had Nine Inch Nails' soundtrack in there. And then the reviews for it came out. I'm like, I think I'll just go buy the CD.
Yeah. Put it on my Spotify or something. That's about it.
Yeah, exactly. This has been Not So Live from Asteroid G, sitting there going, am I as live as I need to be? I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
Your buddy Mike the Ghoul gonna stick this one up in Sagaway, Alaska, and never talk about it again, hopefully.
We will see you all next time.